Hello, it's Scott Manley here. Right now, we're looking at Artemis 2 potentially launching next month, taking astronauts on a flight around the moon. A decade ago, however, NASA was talking about SLS being the rocket that would take astronauts to Mars. But you know, with Mars being so ambitious, NASA had been planning an intermediate destination that would give the Orion spacecraft a way to test its capabilities in deep space while also letting the engineers develop new technologies needed for Mars. NASA proposed a mission to visit an asteroid, and asteroids are also referred to as minor planets. So technically, this flight to an asteroid would be the first flight of humans to another planet. Except, instead of going to an asteroid in interplanetary space, the asteroid would be brought into a distant retrograde orbit around the moon using a robotic spacecraft. And because it had to be moved, this wasn't the mountain in space. It was more like a boulder, maybe 4 meters across, you know, 15 feet. It was likely smaller than the Orion spacecraft itself. This was the asteroid redirect mission. And if you're one of the many people who started following me because I played Kerbal Space Program, you might know that this was actually introduced to the game back in 2014 when the developers of the game collaborated with NASA. This was a pretty big expansion at the time. I mean, literally, it added the largest rocket parts so that players could build their own versions of SLS. But it also added asteroids to the game and parts that could grab them. Suddenly your Kerbin system was sprinkled with these random space potatoes. You could chase them down with the advanced grabbing unit, or the claw as we all dubbed it. It was genius for its simplicity. You could latch on, fire up your engines and redirect the thing wherever you fancied. Players just kind of went nuts with it. I mean, not just serious orbit tweaks and space stations and things like that. No, we actually had a round in Runway Project where we asked players to build aircraft around asteroids and then fight them in a giant Thunderdome arena. I mean, that is Kerbal Space Program for you. Now, we all know what happened to Kerbal Space Program. It inspired a whole generation of rocket engineers. But what happened to the asteroid redirect mission? So, the asteroid redirect mission, it had its roots back in about like 2010. NASA was fresh off the shuttle era, but they were kind of scratching their heads on how to get to Mars without breaking the bank because, well, they weren't getting nearly the amount of funding they needed. The Keck Institute study in 2012 floated this wild idea. Why not grab a tiny asteroid and haul it back to lunar orbit and then turn it into a practice dummy for astronauts, right? It'd test everything from deep space propulsion to planetary defense, all while giving us hands-on experience with space resources. So by 2013, it was official. The Asteroid Redirect Mission, or ARM, was born. Bill Gerstenmaier, NASA's human exploration guru at the time, pitched it as the bridge to the Red Planet, with a robotic phase to snag the rock and then a crewed follow-up to poke at it. So the budget snuck into like financial year like 14 requests, eyeing like a 2017 launch at first. I mean, optimistic as ever, but the core was a solid concept, right? Scout asteroids with telescopes like NEOWISE and Hubble and everything, send a robot to capture one, use fancy ion drives to tow it to a lunar orbit, and then fly Orion out for a while with a crew of astronauts who would be the first humans to visit another planet and probably plant a flag on it while they're there. Now, early on, they debated the mission scope. What was the best way to find a chunk of rock small enough to be grabbed and moved by a spacecraft? Now, option one was the full asteroid grab, right? You can bag a small asteroid, something under 10 meters, probably still several hundred tons. You could use like a big inflatable capture bag, and then you, of course, you'd need to de-spin it after capture. You'd have to have like, you know, hydrazine thrusters and stuff on the spacecraft. But, you know, at least you could determine the rotation before you went there by looking at light curves. And once you'd identified a suitable object, yeah, you'd rendezvous it, put it in the bag, and then bring it back to the moon using ion thrusters. Now, this would be a pretty small object. Telescopes have, however, found a lot of near-Earth asteroids, which are in that size range, but they're really hard to track when they're not close to the Earth. So by 2015, NASA had settled on option two, the boulder pluck. Because it actually ended up stretching more tech muscles, right? Head to the bigger asteroid, say 100 to 1,000 meters across, and analyze it, map it, and then hover over it and robotically snag a 4 to 6 meter boulder that was the right size, maybe weighing about 20 tons. There was no thrusters needed for the grab, just 3 robotic arms and grippers, landing legs to touch down softly, and then a drill to anchor it. And the whole mission plan had the advantage that they could also demo all sorts of planetary defense stuff too. They could use that asteroid as part of a gravity tractor, where you use a spacecraft's mass to pull an asteroid off course gently over time. Of course, since OSIRIS-REx went to Bennu, we now have a better idea of just how loose the surfaces of asteroids are. And you might wonder whether those landing legs could actually land on the surface, or whether they just sink through like a toddler into a ball pit, right? So anyway, let's get to the spacecraft itself, right? This is the Asteroid Redirect Vehicle, or ARV. And this, you know, it wasn't just sketches on a napkin or models in an animation or video game. You know, they actually had some detailed plans, and they had various parts that had been built and prototyped for lab testing. So I think the stats I read was that the dry mass was about 5.5 tons. They added another like 13 tons of xenon propellant. So that put it up to like 18 tons, and then of course it could add another 20 ton boulder to that for the haul back. The core bus was relatively compact because it had to fit inside a 5 meter fairing for like an Atlas V or a Delta IV Heavy, or even a, you know, Falcon Heavy, SLS, yeah, sure. But it was basically like a boxy structure, a couple of meters long, a couple of meters wide, a few meters long. Massive solar arrays, of course, because they baselined at something like 50 kilowatts of solar power. These are like the ROSA arrays, the rollout solar arrays that were used on the International Space Station, but of course they were still in development at that time. They needed the maximum solar collecting power for the minimum mass because they needed this for their ion propulsion system. Yes, when you're wanting to move what would be the heaviest thing humans have ever brought back from deep space, then you need some serious oomph. I mean, for this, NASA was developing something called the Advanced Electric Propulsion System, AEPS. The propulsion system was supposed to be like 4 magnetically shielded hull thrusters, right? Plus a spare for good measure. Each of these would consume something like 10 to 12.5 kilowatts, and in return, it would generate maybe 300 to 400 millinewtons of thrust at 3,000 seconds of specific impulse from its xenon propellant. That would make it some of the highest thrust, low thrust electric thrusters ever designed. And even then, they would generate accelerations of about 10 micro-g. But of course, over months and years, this adds up to substantially more delta V than the chemical rockets that we could achieve for the same payload. Like, a large rock really wasn't exactly in a rush to get anywhere. It wasn't going to expire. Furthermore, the solar electric propulsion was seen as a key part of like Mars missions, and so they really wanted to test this, right? They wanted to test Mars tugs that could ferry equipment back and forth, and again, equipment that wasn't time sensitive, like rocks or food. The idea is you would shift all the cargo to Mars and it would be waiting there when the humans get there. So anyway, yeah, the tanks have like, you know, 8 tons, 16 tons of fuel of xenon or whatever. They would also have hydrazine monoprop system, which would be needed for like attitude control, despinning asteroids and things like this. They had a telecom that was baselined at like, it was X-band, 1 meter antenna and all that, so that they can actually get fairly fast connections. Of course, because they're wanting to get good camera images as they are trying to find the ideal chunk of rock on the surface. They have like infrared spectrometers, laser altimeters, a whole bunch of onboard autonomy so that they can move in and grab it without intervention from the Earth because of light delay. And of course, the whole thing would have to have a docking adapter on it so that a Orion spacecraft could latch on. So the exact mission profile varied depending upon the target, but a typical one, say a boulder from Itokawa-like asteroid, it would launch in 2021 on a heavy lifter. Outbound leg would be about 2.5 years of low thrust spiraling, burning through about 4 tons of xenon as those ion engines like hummed away. Rendezvous would be a couple of years later, September 2023. 51 days of characterization, orbiting the asteroid, mapping it, picking the boulder. And, you know, this could be anything from 10 to like 70 tons, depending upon how much propellant they had left. then they would perform the capture, right? They would descend autonomously, touch down with the legs, deploy the three-armed restraint system, and gripping it with like their microspine grippers and drills and everything, and then they would ascend. So they would have like about 3 weeks of margin for like retries and hiccups, and then it would be like a, you know, 1 year window where they had like time for their planetary defense things, where they could verify the gravity tractor and things like this. So by about a year after arriving at the asteroid, they would start heading back for Earth. It would take a few years to get there. And then you're talking like 2027, the asteroid would be in the, you know, distant Earth orbit, distant retrograde orbit around the moon. That's when you could send your Orion spacecraft up to it. The crew would go up, they would dock to that adapter, and then they would spacewalk. They would EVA around it and plant their flag, do their drills, get their samples and all that. And then, of course, the asteroid redirect spacecraft, it could let go of its pet rock after the humans went away, and it could begin a new life as a space tug, testing hardware for new Mars missions. They could refuel it. This was one of the core requirements, was they wanted refuelable space tugs. And so this would become a future part of the testing of a Mars mission. So now, what actually got built? Because it wasn't all talk, right? NASA had partners, they rolled up their sleeves, and they prototyped real hardware. There was the capture module at Goddard Space Flight Center. They built this big 7 degree of freedom robotic arm borrowed from like some satellite servicing project. It was like hands-on stuff. They could, you know, practice the precise maneuvers to go up to an asteroid and snag the boulder without turning it into gravel. Over at Langley Research Center, they welded up full-scale metal prototypes of the restraint system. The claws, right? This is like a big thing that could grab something the size of a house. And they ran tests on this with giant styrofoam, you know, rocks in the lab. And over at JPL, they actually developed like a grabber with microspines on it, thousands of tiny hooks that could grab onto rock-like surfaces and hold them. Remember, the manipulator arm on the shuttle in the space station, that needs a specially designed anchor fixture to grab objects. And of course, these don't naturally occur in the solar system, so they needed something that could grab onto rock, and they came up with this hook system. They also, of course, had like a drill that could drive in for anchoring as well. And there was a few other ideas that they basically figured out, because they need to latch on fast and then lift the thing up. But the propulsion system, that had a lot of work. That was done at Glenn Research Center. And this is where they hot fired the Hall Effect rocket with magnetic shielding, or Hermes, right? That's the 12.5 kilowatt Hall thruster. And so they were able to fire this for thousands of hours of wear testing and verified that it worked. They verified the high power processing units, that they could, you know, adjust the voltage and everything. The vacuum chamber tests proved that the system could handle the multi-year operations without eroding away. And so all this like physical hardware was basically in the aim of advancing like flight readiness for this hypothetical mission, you know, knocking down the uncertainties through like real world work. And yeah, again, they did this at like JPL, Goddard, Langley and Glenn. So, of course, now, 10 years on, we know that the plug got pulled, right? It got shut down in 2017 under a budget reshuffle that was brought in by Trump. The whole project had been expected to cost something like $2.6 billion, but only a fraction of that had actually been spent. And the truth was that no matter how logical this intermediate step in planetary exploration was, it didn't really have that many fans and supporters. Nobody was getting excited about sending an astronaut to visit a boulder, right? A rock that was smaller than the spacecraft they were flying in. I think some people thought the whole idea felt like cheating. Critics called it a diversion from Mars or from the moon, depending upon, you know, what target they had locked in. It wasn't exactly a ticking clock that required a strict development schedule, so it was easy to cancel. So sure, it was cancelled, but like a good Kerbal engineer, salvaging discarded spacecraft parts are still in orbit. The tech that has been developed didn't die. The propulsion system was effectively relabeled as the power and propulsion element of the Lunar Gateway, which is, of course, another project that critics are calling a diversion from the Moon or Mars. But the development never really stopped, right? After all, there's a lot of people interested in high-powered Hall effect thrusters, so having those in NASA's box of tricks really makes sense. So that project never died. Maxar ended up winning the project to develop the PPE for the Gateway back in like 2019, and they're like building around one of their old satellite bus designs, and they're going to get, you know, similar power output, 50 to 60 kilowatts from massive rollout solar arrays. They've got like a bunch of different Hall effect thrusters, so six of these are like the Busek thrusters, and then there's some of the Hermes thrusters, right, from the AEPS program. Again, direct descendants from the asteroid redirect mission. The fuel requirements, thankfully, have been scaled back to only 5 tons of xenon, which is still a ridiculous amount. It's still like half the mass of the launch, right? It also incorporates like bipropellant reaction control thrusters. And of course, the whole thing has to be human rated because it's part of a space station. So in Artemis, the power and propulsion element is like the powerhouse of the station, right? It's going to be orbiting the Moon for 15 years, providing continuous power for the station. It's going to act as the communications relay. Its propulsion system is going to be used to trim the final orbit continuously, but also it's going to be used to carry the space statecraft to its initial orbit, right? It's going to be launched on a Falcon Heavy, already mated to the habitation and logistics outpost. These were Spectre's two separate parts, but it's easier to just bolt them together and send them up as a single spacecraft. So this is like the habitation and logistics outpost, which is essentially a Cygnus spacecraft with environmental control systems to help support like visiting astronauts. The last time I looked, the PPE Halo launch is at the end of 2027, and from there it's going to take about a year to actually use its propulsion system to get all the way out to the final orbit. And then the asteroid redirect mission will live on in some form. And so if the Gateway flies, yes, it won't have the claw, but it will still have the heart of the asteroid redirect mission. I'm Scott Manley. Fly.
Wait, Scott, you have to stop. You can't finish on that. You see, things have changed. Yeah, I'm new me. I'm from your future. Remember, like, Interstellar Quest, where I talk about, you know, how you were young and foolish and you believed that perhaps SLS might maybe launch in March? Well, it's March 1st and it's not launching because things have been pushed back. But moreover, your comment about the power and propulsion element for the Lunar Gateway, that is somewhat in question as of Friday, because we found a new and wonderful infographic from NASA showing plans for Artemis, and nowhere to be seen on it is the Lunar Gateway. We don't know what its state is. We don't know whether it might launch, and it's entirely possible that this piece of hardware, which has at its heart the asteroid redirect mission, the asteroid redirect vehicle, the power propulsion element, it may not, in fact, launch anymore. Who knows? Lots of questions are suddenly there. But I will say, Jared Isaacman, running NASA, has been very interested in things like nuclear electric propulsion. And if you're having a nuclear electric propulsion system, you need a propulsion system, and the power and propulsion element would be well suited to be adapted to that mission. Who knows? Point is, things change again. I'm Scott Manley. Fly safe.